The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you, and enjoy.
Two middle-aged guys meet each other on the street, and they share greetings. And one of them says, how are things going? I understand your son has dropped out of college. I said, yeah, but he's meditating now. His friend said, meditating? What's that? And the guy said, I have no idea, but at least he's not sitting around doing nothing. And it's interesting because we are sitting around, but we're not doing nothing. It's amazing how much internal work and how much there's going on inside when you're doing these techniques. So I want to share a little more about techniques, some of the different skillful means that could be helpful for your practice. There's a, in the ashram where I live, there was someone who asked the teacher and said, look, I don't have a lot of time. So I just want to know, what's the best practice? Just tell me that, and I'll go. And it was a really great question. And I waited. And the teacher waited for a while. He said, the best practice is the one that you do on a regular basis. It really is a real trust that when you begin with any practice, it will change and it will evolve. In fact, from the yoga tradition in which I lived for quite a few decades, the teacher's teacher, who I hadn't met, he had died before I had moved in the ashram, but the story was that his teacher said, I'm going to show you one technique and through this one technique, you will come to understand everything there is to know about yoga and meditation. And what it was a seated posture and doing a particular breathing technique. This is through alternating nostrils. And as he described, he did that very regularly for many, many years, and he began to notice more and more things about the breath, and then that opened up other ideas and other inspiration and developed a very rich and a very full practice. So it's interesting, if you have been meditating for a long time, you might reflect on how much your practice has evolved over time, how you might discover a new technique and how that technique might take you in a different direction. Or if you're brand new to the practice, you may find, wow, this technique is really, really powerful, and you can do that one technique for quite a while, and it will provide a lot of insights and a lot of powerful experiences in your meditation practice. But as I said last week, there is no one technique that we can consider mindfulness meditation. So what I'd like to do in the little bit of time that I have is to review just a little bit more about the technique of using breath, or as it's called in Vipassana, Anapanasati, which is the remembering of breath, and to talk a little bit about sound meditation. And I'd like to share a little bit about the different variations of the body scan technique, which I consider to be one of the really powerful practices. And we'll talk a little bit more about yet another technique, which is not so embodied, but it's about developing your capacity to notice. It's the practicing called noting, to note the nature of your thoughts as they arise, which can be a very helpful practice. There are challenges to it, but I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And then, if we have time, review a little bit more on the heart practices as well. So the breath is really foundational to mindfulness meditation, but it's not required. You can use other techniques. When you're watching a movie and you see someone dive underwater, do you hold your breath to see if you could survive that situation? Just curious, anyone do that? I almost died watching Finding Nemo. I don't know. The breath is a really powerful, powerful practice. Anytime you move from thinking to experience, you're creating kind of a radical experience. You're moving from being identified to thought to the experience of here and now, which may allow you to actually observe or witness that thought. And I touched a little bit on sound as well. It's a very different experience from thinking about sound to experiencing the sound in meditation. So I'd like to do a little review of both breath-based meditation, some of the different strategies you can use, and we'll do a little bit on sound as well, just to kind of sharpen our practice there a little bit. So if you'd like, you can close your eyes. For those of us who have a lot of training in yoga, you've probably learned a lot about the manipulation of breath, where you're encouraged to breathe slow and full and deep. And that can be very, very helpful. But in classical Anapanasati, the breath is not manipulated at all. It is the utterly natural and free-flowing quality of breath. So often what I'm doing, sort of the classical technique, the first thing is simply to notice where you feel the breath the most predominant. And as you explore that, you may notice this shift from thinking into feeling. Some techniques or some traditions will have you narrow your attention to the belly. So the primary practice here is noticing the very subtle movement of the breath at the belly. And one of the powerful side effects of this particular focus is that it requires you to relax your belly so you can more intimately feel the breath. And notice what happens if you soften the belly, if it perhaps opens up a little more intimacy here. This can be a very calming technique. It sort of calms the whole enteric nervous system. Another classical technique is to bring the attention to the breath at the nostrils. And again, the breath is natural and effortless. And yet another alternative is to feel a sense of the whole body breathing, where you open your attention to the full sense of the entire body breathing in and breathing out. The use of breath or Anapanasati is something that can be done over an extended period of time, But also there is an immense power in just feeling one breath. And you might explore just for the next breath, how intimately can you experience it on the inside? Notice the effect on the mind. I'd like to offer just a few pointing out instructions for another anchor, which is the anchor of sound. Sometimes sound awareness can brighten your attention if you're feeling a little too subtle or kind of sinking mind. When you open to sound, it's a little wider, a little brighter. And you'll notice that you cannot hear better by trying harder. It opens up a sense of receiving the moment. And you might explore a distinction that sometimes is very clear in Zen meditation. It's described as bare attention. And it's the distinction between listening to the mind, which will label the sound, find its location, and actually experiencing the sound as vibration. And we'll explore sound meditation for the next few minutes. Again, you may notice the effect or imprint of sound as your primary anchor. You might gently deepen the breath. In your own time, you can let your eyes open, or you can remain with them closed. I find personally, sometimes when I begin a meditation practice, I'll use sound for the first few minutes, just as a way of sort of landing. And there's something very helpful about sound meditation as well. And that is the sense, it clarifies the sense of impermanence. that you realize that the sounds are completely beyond your control. All you can really do is receive, notice the sound vibrations as they come through. And it can help you to establish that sense of who you are as the awareness of change. And sometimes using sound as a metaphor can be quite helpful for your practice, because if you can apply that same sense of the sound vibrations just moving through to your own thoughts and other sensations, it again reinforces that sense of just being present to the flow of your life. And again, both of these techniques of breath and sound are about moving away from the cognitive or the narrative to the direct experience of here and now. And there is another technique which I find quite reliable, and there are many variations to the practice, and that is the body scan meditation, where you're systematically moving your attention through different parts of the body. It's very much a part of yoga practice, of course, but it's very integral to the practice of Vipassana meditation as well. Some traditions emphasize it quite a bit as the primary practice. Other traditions have it more as an adjunct to the practice. But the very first retreat I went to was in a tradition where the technique was really considered primary. And for the first 4 days of this 10-day retreat, we were doing the Anapanasati technique of just focusing on breath. And this particular retreat was incredibly rigorous. It was about 10 hours a day, no reading, no writing, no talking, and they even no yoga, no exercise. Just all about the technique. And the first 4 days, the breath was at the nostrils, kind of narrowing your attention to just the very, very patch of skin under the nostrils. Excruciating, as you can imagine, but after a time, you begin to get very, very present. And on the fourth day, you're then taught the body scan technique, where you begin systematically from the crown of the head and moving through the body, just noticing the quality of sensations just as they are. And what happens over time, if you practice this intensively, is you begin to get very, very sensitized to the whole felt sense of the body. You realize there are some parts of the body where it's very easy to kind of feel all the subtlety of sensation. Other parts of the body will feel more dense. It's harder to kind of penetrate awareness into those parts of the body. Sometimes those dense part of the body will have some, there'll be some quality of holding or tension or even some kind of locked emotion in those parts of the body. And as you get more and more subtle in your practice, you can actually sort of move your attention through the body, like almost like piercing different, you know, through different parts of the body. So I was having a lot of fun with this technique. And at about day six or seven, there was an interview with a teacher, and everyone was very quiet, and the teacher would be in the front of the room as this tiny little Indian woman. And when it was your turn, you'd walk up, and then she would ask you some questions. And so when it was my turn, she said, you know, do you have the technique? And I said, yes, I think so. And she said, are you having success? And I said, it's amazing. I just feel like parts like opening up. I feel like I can push energy through my body to the back, to the front. And she goes, don't play games. Utterly busted. We so want to make this exciting and interesting. But again, just as you're not controlling the breath, what you're trying to do is to come in contact with that direct experience of what's happening on the inside. So there are different ways you can practice this technique. Some are more general, And some of them are very, very detailed. And one way that I might practice that I find helpful is to just systematically move your attention through different parts of the body, just like you're checking in at certain particular points. And there's particular sort of touch points in the body that I find very, very helpful. And there are these points where you tend to hold tension. And one of them is the forehead. So if you feel your forehead smooth, it just sort of softens something kind of in the whole brain. The next place where we tend to hold tension is around the eyes. And then in the jaw, and particularly the tongue. We hold tension in the tongue and the jaw. The next place is the belly. Again, because the belly automatically tightens. If there's any anxiety, you're going to feel it first, generally here in the belly. So you soften the belly. And then we have a huge amount of sensitivity in the palms and fingers, and some in the soles and the feet. So it's just sort of systematically moving through the body and just touching in at these different points. And I'll guide you through this. You can try this on. It'll be just for a few minutes. Again, you can close your eyes. And as you do this practice, just notice what effect you may feel on the inside. So can you feel right now your forehead smooth? Can you soften the muscles around the eyes? Can you relax your tongue so it fills your lower jaw? Could you soften the belly? And can you relax the palms? Could you soften the soles of the feet? And can you feel the forehead smooth? And could you soften the muscles around the eyes? Can you relax your tongue and let it fill your lower jaw? Can you soften the belly? Can you relax the palms and the soles of the feet? There is a direct link between how deeply you can relax and how intimately you can feel. When you feel the forehead, how intimately can you sense here? When you soften the eyes, can you find any new sensations? When you explore and relax and feel the tongue and the mechanism of the jaw, what do you find? What do you feel here? And softening into the belly. Is there any internal shift that occurs when you hold your attention here? And when you let your awareness flow into your palms, into the soles of the feet, how intimately can you feel any sense of aliveness here? And just noting anything that may have shifted just in these few minutes of guiding your attention inward. And then again, if you like, you can deepen the breath. And if you'd like, you can open your eyes. So you may have noticed, perhaps, the more intimately you relax, the more intimately you feel. And the more it creates a sense of absorption, how the mind becomes more and more present in the body. So moving from touch points can be a very helpful technique. Another is to systematically scan through the body. What you may find at certain times when you get really relaxed and concentrated, you can really narrow your attention. In fact, in this particular tradition where I learned this technique, eventually you move toward, imagine a little circle about the size of a quarter, and you're letting that little dot the size of a quarter slowly move through your body. And you're exploring all the intimate sensations right at that point as it moves around. And again, there are two elements that can be very, very challenging. At the same time, it can take you to a very deep place of concentration. It's not necessarily easy at times. It's very, very hard to do. I remember once I was studying the body scan kind of technology, if you will. I was listening to one body scan that John Kabat-Zinn was leading. It was one of these ultra-detailed, I don't know if you've ever done these ultra-detailed scans. They can be either wonderful or excruciating. And at one point, he was like, and now feeling the second knuckle of the left finger on your right hand. And now feel the, you know, and you're moving from knuckle to knuckle. It's a workout. But the point of this is, again, making this profound distinction between the realm of the cognitive, your story, the narrative, and the experience of here and now. And so the question becomes, when you are intimately aware and present in the energetic experience of the body, you will develop this capacity to observe everything that arises from the body. And this is where this practice becomes so valuable. There's a certain chain of causality that arises from the energetic experience of here and now. At the most fundamental level, it's energy. It's not good, it's not bad, it's just life force. And what arises out of that experience, this mass of energy, is in this particular tradition, it's called Vedana. And that is a feeling tone will arise. And the feeling tone, your mind will immediately interpret as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And without even being aware of it, your mind is going to go into immediate reaction. Unpleasant, get rid of it. Pleasant, keep it. Neutral, I'm bored. Your entire life arises out of that reaction to the present moment. So this certain chain of causality goes raw energy, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, thoughts. If you think the same thought 100 times, it becomes a belief. If you act from your beliefs, they become habits. If you act out of habits, they become your character. And your character becomes your destiny. So that's why the body is the primary form of the practice. So when you meditate and you hear the instructions and bring your attention back to the anchor, You're bringing yourself back to the raw data of here and now. And from there you begin to recognize, wait a minute, this is the 10th time I've had this thought. Or you might begin to realize, why do I always react this way to that? Or you might realize, you know, that belief that keeps cycling around, is that true? Do I really believe that belief? Or you begin to see into all of your conditioning, everything in your life that is designed for you to avoid pain and strategize for pleasure, all arises out of your capacity to be intimately a present to the body and everything that arises. So that leads to another technique, which is a little bit nuanced. And it's not so much an embodied technique, but what you do with what arises from your body and your experience of your body, which is your thoughts. And this has to do with your capacity to notice what you're thinking. You're reacting in every moment. And oftentimes you're reacting to your reactions. I was trying to think of a good example on this, and someone was asking me how Tara, my wife, and I met. And we met at a conference where we were both keynoting. And I was immediately attracted to her. And she was guiding meditation, and all the other presenters were sitting out front. And so she was leading meditation. And as she was leading meditation, I suddenly started thinking to myself, she's really hot. Like, wow, I wonder if I could, this is something I think I really want to pursue. And then I thought, oh my God, you're meditating. You know, what are you doing? And then right then she said, and whatever thoughts are there, just let them be. I thought, okay, I guess I can roll with this. So that was one experience of noting thoughts. But maybe you've noticed you've had some thoughts in these practices and these meditations. And I think some of the greatest confusion we have in meditation is our relationship to thoughts. Some people feel like, well, we're not supposed to have thoughts in meditation, which is, of course, not true. Or you might think, well, some thoughts are better than others. And you might also think that fewer thoughts are better than lots of thoughts in meditation. And that's a real trap. And I've mentioned this analogy before, but I think it bears repeating. We tend, maybe you don't do this, but I think most people do. After meditation, you tend to give yourself a report card. And you tend to think, well, the ones with fewer thoughts, that was a good one. And the ones where I had a whole ton of thoughts, those are the bad ones. There's another way to look at it. The analogy is you're rowing a boat across a lake. In one direction, the wind is coming like at two-thirds of an angle. There's water splashing over the gunwales. You're having to course correct the whole time. It's a really challenging row across the lake. As you turn around to come back, suddenly the wind shifts and it's directly behind you, and you're just effortlessly moving your way across the lake. Well, it's easy to think that the row where you were against the wind was like the bad one, and the one where the wind was at your back was a good one. But where you were rowing against the wind and having the course correct, that's where you were developing your skill. That's where you're developing strength. You're developing your wisdom and your capacity to navigate. In that same way, you can easily argue that the meditations where you are having to again and again disassociate from that thinking mind and bring yourself back, establish that sense of non-judging witness again and again and again, you can easily argue those are the best meditations. Those are the ones where you're really developing, you're developing clarity, you're developing that sense of resilience that can really make a difference in your life. So, arising out of Vedana, arising out of this felt sense of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, will come thoughts, all kinds of thoughts. And we think about 50,000 thoughts a day. Most of them are not originals, if you haven't noticed, and they don't stop during meditation. In fact, sometimes they feel a little more enhanced in meditation. So there's a practice called noting or labeling that can be a useful way to interrupt the incessant flow of thoughts. And in this practice, you're not analyzing the thoughts and you're not judging the thoughts, but you're just noting them. You're giving them a name. So right now, if you close your eyes, it's just a little Zen pop quiz. If you could just take in a long, deep breath, and as you relax, just sort of feel. If you could summarize your experience right now in one word, what word would you use? This capacity to sort of name or note your experiences can be very, very helpful. So if you like, you can again open your eyes. And this noticing faculty can cover a lot of information. There are different streams that will come through your practice. There's the stream or the flow of sensations. So you might notice warmth or coolness or pressure. You might have different emotional streams moving through, where you might just name happiness or fear or boredom or resisting. You might notice primarily the flow of mental activity coming through. And you might just name this as wanting or planning or bored. You might become more aware of the breath in the foreground of your awareness. And you might just simply notice rising or falling. And what you do in the practice is you just note the experience. You label it just so you acknowledge it. You just sort of acknowledge it. Now, there are a couple benefits and there are some challenges to this. And then we're going to close our session with a little practice. It can be a very powerful way to keep you present. It was kind of an anchor. Oh, boredom. Oh, restless. If you can better recognize or acknowledge what's there, it can sort of strengthen your capacity to recognize. We talk a lot about how this practice is like a big circle with a line through it. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not yet aware of. Sometimes naming it will help you name something just below the line. Oh, anxiety or fear. Just naming it can be helpful. It can help you notice patterns. Oftentimes, particularly as your practice deepens, you'll begin to notice your top 10, like the top 10 stories that just keep cycling through. So noticing those patterns can be really helpful. Another benefit is it can give your mind something to do. And it can also give you a sense of non-reactivity. That all you're doing is just naming what's there. And particularly when there's strong emotion, that can be very, very helpful. Just to sort of name, oh, anger. Oh, wanting. Shame. That sense of calmly recognizing as you watch something unwind or unfold. This can be a complicated practice. There's no right way to do it. You have to find your own tone. Sometimes it'll be helpful to be rigorous, to kind of sharpen the noting practice. Sometimes you're going to notice you're too tight. You know, you just feel like you're just, oh my God, there's so much to notice. How do I name it? And then you need to learn how to relax a little bit. And sometimes, oftentimes, it's best just to completely drop it. But you might find it to be helpful. A couple of challenges. If it feels mechanical, then just let it go. If you're focusing too much on being on the noting itself, just let it go. Sometimes it can create kind of an artificial distance to your experience. It can actually disassociate you from maybe investigating an emotion. just to be aware of that. And sometimes you can get into a whole mental thing of like, is this the right word? You know, and that can take you off into a whole other world as well. So it's something to be done in a very, very light way. One teacher said that it's kind of like you've got just a little peacock feather and just touching it with a peacock feather. So this can be a skillful practice. I'm aware of the time, so I think it'd be helpful to do a little bit of practice before we close. So if you like, you can let your eyes close. And again, let your attention come into the body. Remember, the ground of your experience is this aliveness in the here and now. Feel the breath. Feel the sounds. Feel what could soften or relax. And sense in your own way this quality of the observer, of who you are as the one who is aware of what is arising in this moment. And in your own way, over these next just few minutes, explore this quality of noting or labeling what arises, doing it as if you would with a light feather. Letting the technique fall away. And in these final moments, just sensing what it is that has called you in your life to pause and to practice. I'll close with a poem from a good friend. It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still. And just like that, something in me settles and softens and makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and I remember again that life is not a relay race. That we will all cross the finish line. That waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget, catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times, I can make the choice to stop. To breathe and be and walk slowly into the mystery. And in your own time now, you can deepen the breath. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. These practices, to me, are the practices that can truly free our hearts and truly open us to the mystery. And I hope you find them fruitful. And one other thing before we close, is that it's very important you have nourishment on the path, which is why we have cookies tonight on the way out, tea and cookies. If you'd like to be on the mailing list, you can sign up in the back. As always, thank you for your support for the church and myself. May you and your practice have a wonderful evening, and I will see you next week. Thank you.